In the shadowy world of Shadowhunters, Cassandra Clare's City of Glass stands as a pivotal turning point in her best-selling Mortal Instruments series. This third installment catapults readers into Alicante, the ancestral home of the Nephilim, where ancient secrets and forbidden loves collide with devastating consequences. The novel has become a cultural touchstone for young adult fantasy readers, with over 4 million copies sold worldwide and consistently appearing on the New York Times bestseller list. What makes this book particularly fascinating is how it challenges traditional notions of identity and family, themes that resonated so deeply with readers that the series expanded into a multimedia empire, including film adaptations and the popular Shadowhunters television series. Even celebrities like Emma Watson and Lily Collins have publicly praised Clare's intricate world-building. As we step into the glass towers of Alicante, we're about to discover why this story continues to captivate readers over a decade after its publication. The novel opens with Simon and Clary navigating their post-breakup awkwardness in a Brooklyn coffee shop, their once easy friendship now strained with unspoken tensions and careful politeness. This mundane teenage drama quickly becomes trivial when Simon arrives at the New York Institute, finding the historic building buzzing with unprecedented activity as Shadowhunters prepare for a mass exodus to Idris, their ancestral homeland. The Gothic architecture of the Institute seems to pulse with nervous energy, reflecting the urgency of the moment. Jace, his golden eyes intense with barely concealed emotion, pulls Simon aside into a shadowed alcove with an urgent request: lie to Clary about her welcome in Idris. His motivation appears protective on the surface. The Clave, with their rigid traditions and ruthless pragmatism, would likely exploit Clary's unique ability to create new runes, abilities unseen in centuries of Shadowhunter history. But Simon, with the keen insight of someone who has known Clary all his life, recognizes the deeper truth in Jace's tightly controlled expression. Despite believing they share Valentine's blood, Jace's feelings for Clary remain devastatingly unchanged. This forbidden attraction forms the emotional core of the story, a modern echo of classical tragedy. The psychological complexity of their situation is masterfully rendered. Both Jace and Clary struggle with feelings that society deems unnatural, yet feel completely natural to them. Jace's solution is physical distance, manifesting in cold shoulders and carefully maintained spaces between them. But fate intervenes with brutal efficiency. When forsaken warriors, twisted, ruined humans, breach the Institute's defenses during the portal creation, the carefully orchestrated evacuation dissolves into chaos. In the ensuing battle, Simon is struck down and accidentally pulled through the portal with the retreating Shadowhunters, his mundane status making the journey potentially lethal. Meanwhile, Clary, driven by desperation to find a cure for her mother's mysterious coma, attempts the impossible, creating her own portal to Idris. This dangerous feat, never before accomplished by a single Shadowhunter, demonstrates both her extraordinary power and her reckless determination. Her arrival in Lake Lynn, whose waters are toxic to Shadowhunters, nearly proves fatal. Luke's timely rescue saves her life, but not before the poisonous water induces vivid hallucinations that color her first view of Alicante. Through her fevered consciousness, we see the Shadowhunter capital in dreamlike detail, a honey-colored city in a shallow valley with a silvery river running through it, its legendary demon towers rising like crystalline sentinels, their surfaces catching and amplifying the light like massive shards of quartz. The forbidden love between Jace and Clary intensifies in Alicante, where the close proximity of the ancient city's winding streets and shared living spaces makes their self-imposed separation increasingly difficult. Every accidental touch, every caught glance, carries the weight of their impossible situation. Their struggle mirrors universal human experiences, whether due to social constraints, cultural differences, or family obligations. The emotional toll of fighting against what feels fundamentally right while believing it to be wrong creates a psychological tension that drives the narrative forward, leaving readers to wonder if there could possibly be a resolution that doesn't end in heartbreak for these star-crossed lovers. Claire masterfully weaves complex political dynamics throughout the novel, using the shadow world as a mirror for real-world prejudices and power struggles. In Alicante, we witness the deeply entrenched bigotry toward downworlders, vampires, werewolves, warlocks, and fairies. When Simon, a vampire, arrives in the city, he immediately faces discrimination. During a conversation at the Penhallows house, Aline casually remarks that vampires have no souls, revealing how normalized such prejudice has become among Shadowhunters. This prejudice extends to institutional levels. When Luke, a werewolf, enters Alicante illegally to help Clary, he risks severe punishment. Downworlders must register at specific gates and follow strict regulations, a system reminiscent of historical segregation practices. The Clave, the governing body of Shadowhunters, maintains these divisions despite their shared mission of fighting demons. The political tension reaches its peak when Valentine attacks Alicante by bringing down the protective wards. In the aftermath, Luke proposes an alliance between Shadowhunters and Downworlders, suggesting Downworlders receive council seats. This radical proposal meets fierce resistance from traditionalists, who view Downworlders as lesser beings. Consul Malachi exemplifies this prejudice when he condemns the invasion of Downworlders who come to help, insisting Shadowhunters fight their own battles despite being clearly outnumbered. Through these political machinations, Claire explores how power structures maintain themselves through artificial divisions and how crises can either reinforce prejudices or create opportunities for transformation. The shadow world's politics aren't merely fantasy elements, but reflections of our own society's struggles with inclusion and equality. When Valentine offers the Clave an ultimatum, surrender to him or face demonic destruction, he exploits these divisions, knowing that a united front would be his greatest threat. The political commentary becomes most poignant when Claire addresses the Clave, warning that Valentine won't stop with Downworlders, but will eventually destroy anyone with Downworlder connections. Her speech highlights how prejudice ultimately harms everyone, even those who think themselves safe within the privileged group. This moment challenges readers to examine their own complicity in systems of discrimination and the artificial boundaries we create between us and them. Deception permeates City of Glass, with characters wearing both literal and figurative masks. The most significant betrayal comes from Sebastian Verlac, who initially appears as a charming, helpful shadow hunter, but is revealed to be Jonathan Christopher Morgenstern, Valentine's actual son and Clary's biological brother. His infiltration of Alicante represents the ultimate deception, allowing him to bring down the city's protective wards from within. Sebastian's character embodies the perfect spy, charismatic, attentive, and skilled at reading others. He gains Clary's trust by offering to help her find Ragnar Fell, kisses her to test her reaction to him, and ingratiates himself with the Lightwoods. His performance is so convincing that no one questions his identity until it's too late. The revelation that he murdered young Max Lightwood for spotting him climbing the demon towers is particularly devastating, showing the cold calculation behind his charming facade. Another significant betrayal comes from Hodge Starkweather, the Shadowhunters' former tutor who had betrayed them to Valentine in the previous book. When Simon and Jace discover him imprisoned in the guard under the name Samuel Blackburn, he reveals crucial information about the Mortal Mirror before Sebastian murders him. Hodge's character represents the complexity of betrayal. He betrayed the Lightwoods out of fear and a desire to escape his punishment, yet in his final moments, he attempts redemption by sharing vital information. Even the Clave itself engages in deception. Inquisitor Aldertree imprisons Simon under false pretenses, attempting to force him to falsely implicate the Lightwoods as Valentine's secret allies. This institutional betrayal reveals corruption at the highest levels of Shadowhunter government, with Consul Malachi later exposed as Valentine's spy. The theme of betrayal extends to personal relationships as well. Jace's harsh rejection of Clary when she arrives in Alicante feels like betrayal to her, though readers understand he's trying to protect her. Similarly, Clary feels betrayed by her mother's lifelong deception about her identity and abilities. These personal betrayals cut deeper than political ones, leaving emotional wounds that characters must heal from throughout the story. Through these layers of deception, Claire explores how betrayal shapes identity and trust. Characters must constantly question who they can rely on and what information is true. This uncertainty creates tension and forces characters to rely on their own judgment rather than institutional authority, a theme that resonates with young adult readers navigating their own questions of trust and identity. Blood carries multiple meanings in City of Glass. It represents lineage, power, and sacrifice. Valentine's experiments with angel and demon blood form the foundation of the novel's central revelation. Jace is not Valentine's biological son, but rather Stephen Herondale's son, given angel blood before birth. Meanwhile, Sebastian, Jonathan and Jocelyn's actual son, received demon blood, explaining his innate cruelty. These blood experiments fundamentally altered both boys' natures. Jace possesses extraordinary fighting abilities and a luminous quality, while Sebastian demonstrates supernatural strength and a capacity for evil that horrifies even Valentine. The contrast between them raises profound questions about nature versus nurture. Jace, raised by Valentine but inherently good because of angel blood, versus Sebastian, Valentine's biological son, corrupted by demon blood from before birth. Lineage plays a crucial role in Shadowhunter society. Family names carry weight, with ancient houses like the Herondales, Lightwoods, and Morgansterns representing different legacies. When Jace discovers he's a Herondale, not a Morgenstern, he receives his father's possessions from Amatus, a family tree, letters, and a witchlight stone. The star-shaped birthmark on his shoulder, previously thought to be a scar, confirms his Herondale heritage. This revelation helps explain why the Inquisitor, his grandmother, sacrificed herself for him in the previous book. Blood also serves as a literal power source. Simon's unique ability to walk in daylight stems from drinking Jace's angel-infused blood. Valentine uses Clary's blood in the ritual to summon Angel Raziel, believing her angel-enhanced blood strengthens the summoning. The mark of Cain that Clary places on Simon's forehead using her blood protects him from harm, returning sevenfold any injury attempted against him. The novel ultimately challenges the Shadowhunter obsession with blood purity. Valentine's downfall comes partly from his refusal to acknowledge the similarities between Shadowhunters and Downworlders, focusing only on differences. The alliance rune Clary creates allows Shadowhunters and Downworlders to share powers through a blood bond, symbolically and literally bridging the gap between these groups. This represents a radical reimagining of Shadowhunter society, suggesting that strength comes from unity and shared blood rather than separation and purity. Through these explorations of blood and lineage, Claire critiques systems that value genetic heritage over personal choice and character. The revelation that Jace is not who he thought he was forces him to confront fundamental questions about identity. If I'm not Jonathan Christopher, who am I? Clary's answer, that he is Jace Lightwood, named by those who truly loved him, suggests that chosen family and personal choices matter more than biological inheritance. Grief permeates City of Glass, affecting characters in profound and different ways. The most devastating loss comes when Sebastian murders Max Lightwood, the youngest member of the family. The scene where the Lightwoods gather around Max's body is heart-wrenching. Isabel was on her knees, her body curved in a posture of grief. Alex stood behind his sister, his hand on her shoulder, his head bowed. This tragedy transforms the Lightwoods, particularly Isabel, who becomes consumed with vengeance. When Simon finds Isabel in her room after Max's death, she's surrounded by scattered clothes and personal items, holding Max's wooden toy soldier. Her grief manifests as guilt. She blames herself for dismissing Max's claim about seeing someone climbing the demon towers. "If I'd listened to him, he'd still be alive," she tells Simon, revealing how grief often intertwines with self-recrimination. Her desire to distract herself from pain by seeking physical comfort with Simon shows another common response to grief, the attempt to numb emotional pain through other sensations. Jace's complex grief for Valentine represents another dimension of loss. Despite Valentine's cruelty and manipulation, Jace still mourns the man who raised him. As he watches Valentine's funeral pyre, Jace reflects on both tender moments and cruel ones from his childhood. Luke acknowledges this complexity when he tells Jace, "Valentine was the father of your childhood. It would be strange if you felt nothing." This nuanced portrayal of grief for a flawed parent resonates with readers who have complicated family relationships. The novel also explores anticipatory grief. When Clary believes she might lose her mother forever, she experiences a desperate form of grief that drives her actions throughout the story. Similarly, when characters face Valentine's ultimatum and prepare for what seems like certain death, they experience a collective anticipatory grief for their way of life and for each other. Claire doesn't offer easy solutions to grief. Instead, she shows characters moving through it in messy, realistic ways. Some, like Isabel, seek vengeance. Others, like Jace, isolate themselves. Still others, like Clary, channel their grief into determination to prevent further loss. By the novel's end, characters haven't gotten over their losses, but have begun to integrate them into their understanding of themselves and their world. This authentic portrayal of grief resonates with readers who have experienced loss. The message isn't that grief ends, but that it transforms, becoming part of who we are, rather than something separate to overcome. As Clary reflects near the end of the novel, memories, even painful ones, shouldn't be erased. They shape us and connect us to those we've lost, forming an essential part of our identities. Sacrifice emerges as a powerful theme throughout City of Glass, with characters making difficult choices that require giving up something valuable for a greater good. The most dramatic sacrifice comes from Jace, who willingly faces Valentine alone to protect others, knowing it will likely result in his death. This self-sacrifice stems from his belief that his life is worth less than others, a mindset Valentine instilled in him through years of emotional manipulation. When Valentine indeed kills Jace by driving the mortal sword through his heart, the sacrifice becomes literal. This moment represents the ultimate price of confronting evil. Yet through Clary's wish to the angel Raziel, Jace is resurrected, not negating his sacrifice, but transforming it into a symbol of love's power to overcome death. Simon's willingness to surrender himself to Raphael and the vampires represents another significant sacrifice. Despite the danger, he offers himself to ensure vampire participation in the battle against Valentine, understanding that without their help, the Night Children would be excluded from the new council. His acceptance of the Mark of Cain, a protection that also marks him as eternally different, shows his willingness to sacrifice normalcy for the greater good. Luke's sacrifice takes a different form. By bringing werewolves to help defend Alakatot despite the Clave's prejudice, he risks his standing and safety. His decision to stay in Idris as the werewolf representative on the council means sacrificing his comfortable life in New York, though this sacrifice ultimately leads to happiness with Jocelyn. Clary's mother, Jocelyn, made perhaps the longest-standing sacrifice, giving up her life as a shadow hunter and keeping Clary's heritage secret to protect her daughter from Valentine. Though Clary initially resents this decision, she eventually recognizes it as an act of love, however misguided. Even minor characters demonstrate redemptive sacrifice. Amatis, who once rejected her brother Luke after he became a werewolf, sacrifices her pride to help him and Clary. Hodge Sarkweather, despite his previous betrayal, sacrifices his final chance at escape to share crucial information about the Mortal Mirror. These various sacrifices illustrate that redemption often requires giving up something valuable: pride, safety, normalcy, or even life itself. The characters who make these sacrifices experience transformation, finding new purpose and connection. By contrast, Valentine's unwillingness to sacrifice his vision of Shadowhunter supremacy leads to his downfall. His rigid adherence to his beliefs prevents him from seeing the strength that comes from unity and cooperation. Through these examples, Claire suggests that true heroism lies not in battle prowess or supernatural abilities, but in the willingness to put others before oneself. This message resonates particularly with young adult readers navigating their own questions about identity and purpose, suggesting that meaning comes from connection and service rather than power or status. Love in its many forms, romantic, familial, platonic, drives the characters' actions throughout City of Glass. The most prominent love story is between Jace and Clary, whose attraction persists despite their belief they are siblings. Their struggle represents love that defies social taboos and rational thought. When they discover they aren't related, Jace's declaration captures the intensity of their connection. "Since the first time I saw you, I have belonged to you completely." But romantic love is just one dimension explored in the novel. The relationship between Luke and Jocelyn demonstrates enduring love that survived decades of separation and trauma. Luke's confession, "I've been in love with you for 20 years," reveals how love can persist through seemingly insurmountable obstacles. Their reunion suggests that patience and constancy eventually receive their reward. Familial love appears in multiple forms. The Lightwoods' grief for Max demonstrates the depth of parental and sibling love. Isabel's devastation and Alex's quiet support show different expressions of the same profound attachment. Jocelyn's complicated relationship with Clary reveals how love can sometimes express itself imperfectly. Her desire to protect Clary led to decisions that caused pain, yet stemmed from deep maternal love. Friendship represents another crucial form of love. Simon's refusal to betray the Lightwoods despite the Inquisitor's threats shows his loyalty to people who, as he acknowledges, see him as just a downworlder, but have somehow become important to him. The friendship between Clary and Simon endures romantic complications and supernatural transformations, demonstrating love's ability to adapt to changing circumstances. Perhaps most significantly, Alex's public kiss with Magnus represents love that defies cultural expectations and prejudices. By openly acknowledging his relationship with a male warlock, Alex chooses authentic love over social acceptance. This moment, which shocks everyone, including Magnus himself, marks a turning point in Shadowhunter society's attitude toward downworlders and same-sex relationships. Through these varied portrayals, Claire suggests that love, in all its forms, has transformative power. It motivates sacrifice, inspires courage, and bridges seemingly insurmountable divides. When Clary creates the Alliance Rune, allowing Shadowhunters and Downworlders to share powers, she creates a physical manifestation of love's ability to connect different worlds. The novel's resolution emphasizes love's redemptive potential. Valentine's downfall comes partly from his inability to love truly. He sees others only as tools or obstacles. By contrast, the characters who embrace love in its many forms find strength, purpose, and ultimately victory. This message, that love is not weakness but power, offers readers hope that connection and vulnerability can overcome even the darkest forces. As City of Glass concludes, the Shadow World stands on the precipice of profound change. Valentine's defeat marks not just the end of an immediate threat, but the beginning of a new social order. The Accords Hall, once a symbol of uneasy truces between Shadowhunters and Downworlders, transforms into a place of genuine celebration, where these groups mingle freely beneath magically transplanted trees wrapped with ribbons and lights. The most significant change comes through the new council structure, which now includes Downworlder representatives. Luke's position as the werewolf representative symbolizes this shift toward inclusion and equality. This political transformation reflects a deeper ideological change, a recognition that Shadowhunters and Downworlders share common goals and can achieve more through cooperation than division. Clary's Alliance Rune catalyzes this transformation by literally allowing Shadowhunters and Downworlders to share powers. This magical innovation represents a radical reimagining of relationships that were previously defined by separation and hierarchy. The rune's success in battle proves that unity creates strength, challenging centuries of prejudice and segregation. On a personal level, characters embrace new beginnings as well. Jace accepts his identity as Jace Lightwood rather than clinging to either the Morgenstern or Herondale name, suggesting that chosen family matters more than biological lineage. Clary commits to training as a Shadowhunter while maintaining her connections to the mundane world. Simon plans to return to high school despite his vampire status, determined to integrate his new reality with his former life. The relationship between Jocelyn and Luke finally blossoms openly after decades of unspoken feelings. Their happiness represents healing from Valentine's toxic influence and the possibility of building something new from painful histories. Similarly, Alec and Magnus step into the public light, their relationship challenging traditional Shadowhunter attitudes toward both sexuality and downworlders. Even the physical landscape reflects this new era. The demon towers of Alicante, once breached by Valentine's treachery, shine again with protective light. The fireworks that conclude the novel, showers of golden sparks, falling like angels from the sky, symbolize both celebration and transformation, suggesting divine approval of the new order. Yet, Claire avoids portraying this new era as a perfect utopia. Challenges remain, prejudices persist, and characters carry their wounds forward. Simon still faces discrimination as a vampire. The Lightwoods still grieve for Max. Jace still processes his complicated feelings about Valentine. These ongoing struggles acknowledge that social transformation is a process rather than an event, requiring continued effort and vigilance. By ending with both celebration and unresolved questions, Claire creates a realistic portrait of societal change, hopeful but not naively optimistic. The new era dawning in the shadow world offers possibilities rather than guarantees, inviting readers to imagine how these characters might continue to shape their world beyond the final page.